WABC New York and 107.1 WLIR Hampton Bays.
It's the 77 WABC News Hour.
Talking the news with Noah Layden.
All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, traffic, Justin Ellick, sports, and now
talking the news with Noah
on 77 WABC.
Yep, that's me. Good morning. It is Monday, April 15th. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Mostly sunny day on the way. Just a beauty. High 76. And then tonight and overnight, some clouds, low 51. Tuesday, we'll do it all over again. Sunshine, high 71. If you are walking out the door with us right now, 57 partly cloudy in Oyster Bay out on Long Island, 56 and partly cloudy over in Irvington in New Jersey, and it is 57 and partly cloudy right here in Midtown. It is tax day, April 15th. Is that still a big deal? I guess it is if you wait till the last minute to pay your taxes. The IRS telling us the demand was overwhelming this weekend as they offered help through the weekend for people who had a problem filing their taxes.
I'm sitting out here with kids. It's cold. It's messed up, man.
That's somebody who was waiting in line outside a tax center.
We're here to clear our name and our identity so we can receive our taxes that we work hard for.
Yeah, you know, lots of fraud still. So experts say if you're running out of time, the IRS will throw you a lifeline for filing your taxes. But, of course, you still got to pay everything.
As of the 15th at midnight, you have to do one of two things. You have to file your federal income tax return under the law or request, and it's a little ironic, it's called an automatic extension of time to file.
So that's Mark Steber with Jackson Hewitt Tax Service. He says the extension gives you to the middle of October to get those forms in and avoid costly penalties. But the catch is the extension to file is not an extension to pay. So you could have to set up a payment plan. But either way, today's the day you got to pay.
Even if you have no money, even if you can't do anything, file your extension or your tax return if you're ready to go and simply don't pay. You have to do something on the record to show that you're compliant with the tax law, either your tax return, postmarked by midnight, preferably electronic filed, or an extension with a good faith estimate of your taxes.
Yeah, so you knew this day was going to come. It's every year, April 15th. Sometimes they push it off a day, but today is that day. The big story here in New York, no doubt today, will be jury selection and former President Trump's hush money case set to begin this morning in Lower Manhattan.
Jury selection is going to be difficult. I have a lot of faith in our team up there that they're going to be able to get the best possible jury. But I think it's really important to note that the fact that this case is being brought at the height of a election season makes the process of picking a jury even more difficult.
That's one of Trump's attorneys, Will Scharf. Timing, location could make it a challenge to select, he says, an impartial jury. Trump accused of falsifying business records to cover up a hush money payment made to adult film star Stormy Daniels ahead of the 2016 election. Scharf says it's possible Trump could take the stand. I'd be shocked if that happens.
I think that's going to be a decision for President Trump and the trial team, depending on how the trial progresses. I would say that I think if he does take the stand, President Trump will be a compelling witness. He did nothing wrong here. The truth is absolutely on his side.
So, of course, an extensive security plan in place to protect the former president as he stands trial in Lower Manhattan. Secret Service security officers going to clear the block in nearby area before Trump arrives for his trial. That's at, of course, 100 Center Street. So it's going to be a mess in Lower Manhattan for, well, potentially weeks to come. Prosecutors are expected to present a lengthy case demonstrating, they say, how Trump used his power and wealth to conceal damaging information from voters during and after the 2016 presidential election. Here's the DA, Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg.
The defendant claimed that he was paying Michael Cohen for legal services performed in 2017. This simply was not true.
So Trump's lawyers tried a number of times, I think 10 in all, to delay this trial. They were unable to do so. So here's what you need to know. Manhattan DA Alvin Bragg alleges that the former president fraudulently and repeatedly falsified business records to conceal criminal conduct. That is part of their case. It goes much deeper than that. One of their main witnesses will be Michael Cohen, the president's former lawyer who did time for lying. So it'll be interesting to see what happens when he takes the stand. How long will this trial take? Well, from the start of jury selection, which begins today, to a verdict, Trump's trial could run from 8 to 6 weeks. Now, he has to be here by law every day the trial is taking place. How will the jury be selected? They will be made up of people who only live here in Manhattan. They have to be English-speaking, of course, U.S. citizens over the age of 18. They can't be ever have been convicted of a crime to be eligible for jury duty. The pool of potential jurors will be chosen at random. And then we'll start to hear the people testify. Cohen, the Trump loyalist, now turned critic, expected to be the key prosecution witness. Trump's defense will be that he has did no wrongdoing. He has slammed this case as an effort to hurt his 2024 presidential campaign. And then we'll get, if he's convicted of this crime, the criminal counts against Trump are Class E felonies, which are punishable by a maximum of 4 years in prison. And the judge, Judge Mershon in this case, has discretion in sentencing if Trump is convicted. Now, we're still a long way away from that. That's 8 or 9 weeks away. Of course, Trump has no criminal history, but there are three other criminal trials. So that would obviously weigh in on what this judge does if he does decide to send him to jail, which, of course, would be just completely shocking. So anyway, we are going into unknown territory. First American president to go on trial in a criminal case. We'll watch this case closely. It all begins this morning, 100 Center Street. Of course, keep it here. 77 WABC will have the latest, and maybe even Donald Trump himself will show up here on Sid and Friends in the Morning. I wouldn't be shocked, especially since he's spending so much time here. WABC News Time 5:08. The other big story of the weekend, no doubt, was the Iranian attack on Israel. It was Saturday afternoon, our time, Iran sending over 200 killer drones in Israel's direction, then firing hundreds of missiles in their direction. Amazingly so, Israel, and along with forces from other countries, were able to repel almost all of it, which is unbelievable. I want to get the latest now from the CEO and Jerusalem Bureau Chief of JNS, which is the Jewish News Syndicate, Alex Trayman. You know him well. He's been on so many times before, and he joins us live on the Newsmaker line from Jerusalem. Good morning, Alex.
Good morning, Noam.
So Alex was kind enough to give us information at the height of this attack when we went live on Saturday night here on WABC. And the last time I spoke with you, you were in your safe room with your family. I can only assume everything has been okay since then. Was there any damage in Jerusalem at all?
No damage in Jerusalem. We did see a lot of interceptions, which appeared to be almost directly overhead, but probably things higher up in the sky towards the atmosphere than they appeared. No damage in Jerusalem. There was some shrapnel that severely injured a girl in the south, a Bedouin girl, 7-year-old girl who had undergone surgery. There were a few missiles that hit the Nevatim Air Force Base, where our F-35s are stationed in the south, but no major damage at the base and no real major damage to any civilian areas.
It is unbelievable to me that there wasn't, because tell me, give me the stats. What came in your direction? What did they try to hit Israel with, Iran?
Well, they sent about 185 drones, UAVs, which are considered suicide drones. They are themselves bombs, but they take significant amount of time, about 2 hours to get from Iran to Israel. They fired 36 cruise missiles, which are pretty serious. They take less than an hour to get over to Israel, can do more damage than the drone. And then they fired 110 ballistic missiles, which basically get shot up into the atmosphere. And then because of the height, they basically come down at the speed of gravity and can arrive from Iran in less than 10 to 15 minutes time. And Israel, together, as you mentioned, with the U.S., U.K., France, also, Jordanian air defenses, Saudi air defenses managed to shoot 99% of this attack out of the sky. They intercepted all of the drones, all of the cruise missiles, and most of the 110 ballistic missiles. Reports this morning that 5 ballistic missiles hit at the Air Force base, which was obviously heavily targeted in the south.
So Did Israel, how much did Israel know of this attack was coming? Obviously, they had their attack on the Iranian consulate in Damascus, which killed some people. And Iran warned that they would retaliate, and they did. So was the intelligence so good that they knew even the timing of this attack, or were they just ready for anything that was coming their way?
They were ready. It does seem as though there was significant intelligence. Obviously, we saw major headlines in Wall Street Journal and other mainstream media that the attack was coming within 24 to 48 hours. It seems as though Israel did have advance notice, even towards the specific timing. I'm not sure down to the minute or the hour, but they kind of had an idea of what Iran was planning. And when there are reports that other countries, including Jordan and Turkey and others, got advance notice that Iran was going to be attacking, as such, they closed their airspace. And that was important because Israel was using that airspace to do missile defense. Israel did seem to have knowledge, and it's not clear if they had knowledge because of intelligence or because it was directly communicated from Iran to the United States. And there's big questions about whether this coordination was meant to give Israel the opportunity to shoot these missiles out of the sky in order to minimize damage, or whether this massive attack really was meant to inflict major damage on Israel. And it was just the luck and success of these missile defense systems that prevented much greater damage from taking place.
We're talking with Alex Trayman, CEO and Jerusalem Bureau Chief of the Jewish News Syndicate. He's live in Jerusalem. Is this the first time that the Saudis and the Jordanians essentially helped Israel by taking down these drones? I don't remember them cooperating with Israel in a way like this ever before. Am I right about that?
You're right, and it demonstrates how big of a threat Iran poses to the entire region. I mean, they've done more than just destabilize Iraq and Syria and Lebanon and Yemen. They pose direct threats to Jordan and also to Saudi Arabia, and it was very encouraging to see Jordan and Saudi Arabia. Israel has a peace treaty with Jordan, albeit a cold peace. Israel is moving slowly, steadily towards normalization with Saudi Arabia again, which would be a major game changer. But clear here that these countries siding not only with the state of Israel, but also with the United States and the UK here, all of them standing up to not only state that Iran is a threat, but to defend the state of Israel from an Iranian attack.
Is there something more going on here? Because it seems like it was all timed out, that everybody kind of knew it was going to happen. It happened. Nobody was hurt. You think there's more to this story?
Well, yes. I mean, I do think that this attack was large enough that Iran did seek to inflict more damage. So a major, major success by Iran. By Israel and its missile defenses to prevent more damage. But you have here the big questions of, can Israel accept such an attack, turn the other cheek, so to speak? How many cheeks does Israel have? I mean, this is one of the largest drone attacks in history, 110 ballistic missiles. This is very, very significant. But because of the success of the Israeli defense and the Alliance of Defense, you're getting a lot of pressure on Israel now not to respond. You had Biden claiming that this is a victory for Israel, certainly a military success in defense, but defense is not a victory. Iran will be able to get away with this attack if Israel does not respond, and perhaps you've established a new status quo where if Israel operates as it has inside Syria, inside Lebanon, to take out Iranian movements of weapons and personnel that are meant to attack Israel via its proxies, that then Iran thinks that they can strike again. And so it definitely raises the stakes here, and there's a lot of questions as to if Israel will respond, when and how, and certainly big debates in the international community about whether Israel should do that.
And one last question for you. You know what's so interesting is on Sunday, so the attacks were Saturday night. On Sunday, the cafes were packed. People went to work like normal. Is that just the nature of Israelis?
Well, I think it's the nature of the intelligence that Israel had. People were told, the Homeland Command gave instructions on Saturday night to to stay close to your house. They forbid gatherings. But the second that that these were already launched, Iran's representative to the United Nations said that from their perspective, the defensive measure that they launched was over and there would be no further attack if Israel didn't counter. So I mean, we suggested that the attack was limited. Essentially, the Star Wars that took place over Israel on Saturday night kind of lasted for about 10 minutes. It was very intense, but then it was all over. And Israelis are very, very resilient, as you know. And the second the mess hits, it gets cleaned up, and then Israelis kind of get back to business. So short of other intelligence of more impending attacks, Israelis are just back to their normal routine right now.
Yeah, amazing. All right, Alex Trayman, CEO, Jerusalem Bureau Chief of the Jewish News Syndicate, as always, thank you very much, and be safe.
Thank you so much, Noah.
Let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk, where we find Justin Ellick. Good morning, Justin.
Good morning, Nomely. Start on the hardwood here at the Garden. Jalen Brunson notched his 11th 40-point game of the season to carry the Knicks into the number 2 seed in the Eastern Conference with a 120-119 overtime victory over the Chicago Bulls in New York's regular season finale. The Knicks finished 50-32, their best season since going 54-28 and also earning a number 2 seed in the 2012-2013 season. They moved past Milwaukee after the Bucks lost earlier yesterday in Orlando and will await the winner of the playing game between Philadelphia and Miami on Wednesday. Brunson finished with 40 points, 8 rebounds, and 7 assists. Tied Patrick Ewing for the second most 40-point games in one season by a Knicks player. He finished the season averaging 28.7 points per game, tying Carmelo Anthony for the third best mark in franchise history. As for the Nets, they wrapped out their season with a 107-86 loss in Philly to the Sixers. They end with a record of 32-50, missing the playoffs there, obviously. On the diamond in Cleveland, the Yankees blew a 2-run lead and lost 8-7 in 10 innings to the Indians. They dropped to 12-4 overall with the loss, still one of the best starts in their history. New York had been 6-0 in one-run games until yesterday's loss. Aaron Judge hit a 3-run homer, Jose Trevino homered, and Anthony Volpe delivered a clutch tying RBI double in the ninth for New York. They'll see if they can rebound in the opener of a 3-game set with the Blue Jays in Toronto. First pitch there scheduled for 7:05 p.m. tonight. As for the Mets, they outlasted the Kansas City Royals for a 2-1 victory in their weekend series finale. Harrison Bader broke a scoreless tie with an infield single in the eighth inning, and Edwin Diaz earned his first save at Citi Field since October 2022 en route to the win. Mets rookie Jose Buto and Royals starter Cole Reagans matched zeros for 6 innings in a crisp pitcher's duel. New York stranded 9 runners over the first 7 innings, 7 between the 5th and 7th before Chris Stratton walked the bases loaded in the 8th. Dwight Gooden also had his number 16 retired by the Mets in a pregame ceremony. Gooden went 157-85 with a 3.10 ERA and 1,875 strikeouts from 1984 to 1994 during his Mets tenure. Up next for the Mets is a 3-game home set against the Pittsburgh Pirates. First pitch for Game 1 set for 7:10 p.m. and Adrian Hazertab to make the start for the Mets. After a quiet day yesterday on the ice, all three local squads back in action tonight with just days remaining in the regular season. Islanders and Devils go head-to-head in Newark at 7 p.m. with the Isles currently hanging on to third place in the Metropolitan Division, 3 points up on Washington and Philadelphia for the 7th seed in the East. As for the Rangers, they'll welcome in the Ottawa Senators for 7:40 puck drop. Still tops in the NHL with 110 points. Finally, from the Lynx in Augusta, Georgia, American World number 1 Scottie Scheffler lived up to his ranking at this year's Masters Tournament, winning his second green jacket with a score of 11 under par. That's your Sports Gnome. I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
WABC News Time 5:22. It was a crazy and awful scene in Australia over the weekend at a busy shopping mall. A man with a knife went on a stabbing spree, killing 6, wounding a bunch of others.
I saw a woman lying on the floor in Chanel, so I didn't see him properly. I was running. But it was insane. It was insanity. I wasn't expecting it.
The attack was in a mall in Sydney.
They just said, run, 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 someone's being stabbed. Saw the guy come up the escalators with a big black knife in his hand. And just really calmly, he was just walking like he was having an ice cream in the park, you know. And then probably within about a minute, we heard 3 gunshots, and that was it.
A police officer shot that attacker dead. One of the injured is a nine-month-old baby. His mother was one of the people that was killed. And now authorities in Australia are identifying this murderer.
Police in Sydney say 40-year-old Joel Couchy had been known to authorities and, according to his family, had suffered from mental health issues since he was a teenager, and that the attack was not motivated by any ideology. Police say members of Couchy's family contacted them after seeing footage of the attack on TV. Video shows the suspect running through a Sydney mall, stabbing people with a long knife, killing seven people and injuring at least a dozen others before being shot and killed by a police officer. Among the injured was a nine-month-old baby. The baby's mother was killed in the attack. I'm Scott Carr.
524, let's bring it back home over to Arizona. Senator Mark Kelly says the Arizona Supreme Court's decision to uphold a strict abortion ban will be disastrous for women in his state. The Arizona Democrat blaming former President Trump for the end of Roe v. Wade.
Donald Trump owns this. He said just yesterday that he broke Roe v. Wade. And because he did that, this enabled our court to bring back this draconian 1864 law to take away this right.
He says the abortion issue will be on the ballot in November. He expects a large voter turnout.
I don't think this represents who we are in the state of Arizona. This is a moment in time. We're going to get through this. We have an opportunity to fix this in November.
It's all connected to the 1864 law from when Arizona was still a U.S. territory that now bans all abortions except for the risk to a mother. Gas prices, they're on the rise again, and they have been for about a month now.
The average price for regular gas has gone up about 20 cents a gallon over the past month. The national average now sits at 363. Experts cite refinery maintenance and growing unrest in the Middle East as potential reasons for the increase. They predict gas prices will get even higher as peak driving season starts and refineries switch to more expensive summer gasoline. I'm Brian Shook.
Yeah, I've definitely noticed prices have gone up. A federal judge is rejecting Hunter Biden's bid to get his gun possession charges dropped.
The president's son was indicted in September for allegedly possessing a gun while using narcotics. On Friday, the judge ruled the case will not be dismissed. The trial is now scheduled to begin June 3rd in Delaware. I'm Jim Forbes.
Coming up on 526, the executor of O.J. Simpson's estate says the late football star will be cremated. His brain, though, will not be handed over for study of CTE. That's, of course, a lot of players have done this as of late to show what the hits they took and what kind of damage it did to their brains.
Malcolm Laverne, who had served as Simpson's lawyer, said he has received at least one request to study the effects of possible head injuries to his brain. Laverne said Sunday there are tentative plans for a private celebration of life gathering for family and close friends. Simpson was the father of five children, three with his first wife and two with his second wife, Nicole Brown Simpson. In what was called the trial of the century, O.J. Simpson was acquitted for the murder of Nicole Brown Simpson and Ron Goldman. I'm Michael Kastner.
The trading week kicks off with today's opening bell after stocks closed sharply lower on Friday. Stocks dropped on renewed inflation fears and reports that Israel preparing for a retaliatory attack by Iran this weekend. Rising oil prices and a broad decline in bank shares also weighed in on market sentiment. At the closing bell, the Dow fell 475 points. S&P 500 lost 75. The Nasdaq, it plunged 267 points.
Talk Radio 77 WABC. It's the 77 WABC News Hour. Talking the news with Noah Layden. All the news you need to know with Joe Nolan, Traffic, Justin Ellick, Sports. And now, Talking the News with Noah on 77 WABC.
Yes, that's me, 532. Good morning. It is Monday, April 15th, tax day. Your forecast from the Ramsey Mazda Weather Center. Sunshine today, just a beautiful day on the way. High 76 tonight and overnight. Some clouds, low 51, and then we'll do it all over again on Tuesday. Sunshine, high 71. If you're walking out the door with us right now, so happy you are. 57 partly cloudy in Oyster Bay out on Long Island. 56 and partly cloudy over in Irvington and New Jersey. And it is 57 called Broken Clouds right here outside our Midtown studios. We'll start this half hour right here in Manhattan, where there was another one of these random punch attacks But this is one that clearly could have been prevented if the guy who was involved should have been and likely could have been behind bars. It took place at Grand Central Station over the weekend. This mom and 9-year-old are walking through the concourse at Grand Central when this 30-year-old guy comes up to them and punches the 9-year-old in the face.
My coworkers were like, oh my God, like a child got punched today in front of Tartinery. And I was like, wow, that's terrible. Like, who was it? And it's like, it's this guy who's given us problems before.
That's somebody who works in the concourse at Grand Central. She says, we know this guy. It's 30-year-old Jean Carlos Zarzula. He has done this before, and they say they're afraid of him because he has gone around the transit, you know, hub, walking around and sort of fake punching people and just causing all kinds of problems at Grand Central.
He like fake like swings at people sometimes, but I guess he's like actually swinging at people now.
So Zarzula was arrested by police back on April 4th, charged with assault. In that case, he randomly punched a 54-year-old woman inside Grand Central. He broke that woman's nose. And then guess where he was just 4 days later? Yeah. There he was, back inside Grand Central, where he allegedly whacked this 9-year-old pretty hard, so hard she ended up in the hospital.
There is a very big, like, mental health crisis here, obviously, and, like the reform for that isn't, you know, gonna just, like, change fast. So, I don't know. It's a very nuanced issue.
Of course, police know exactly who he is, so it didn't take them very long to find him. Just a couple hours later, they picked him up uptown. He's expected to be charged with assault, but guess what will happen? 4 days later, he'll be back at Grand Central Station. You'd think once, okay, twice, three times. At some point, either help him out with his mental health issues or put him behind bars. But clearly he's a threat and a menace to society. If he broke a woman's nose and then he punched a 9-year-old inside Grand Central Station, it just seems obvious to me, but clearly not everybody else. Concerned New Yorkers rallying yesterday outside Kings Plaza Mall. Now, this was an interesting rally. It was regular New Yorkers who were born and raised in New York. But a fair amount of people who showed up at this rally yesterday were immigrants themselves. And they're upset that these migrants are being allowed to cross the border illegally, the Texas-Mexico border, and then able to come here, and that their tax dollars are being spent on these migrants who come here. So they took part in this demonstration yesterday.
What's happening at our southern border, it's no longer at the southern border, it's here.
Demonstrators said that they're against the use of tax dollars to fund housing for undocumented immigrants. They say these people should have to follow the same rules we did and wait till they become American citizens. They say no longer should there be an open border policy. One of the people who was speaking out at that rally yesterday, I saw, was our very own Curtis Sliwa. I'm sure he'll have more to say that when he shows up here later this morning for his 7:15 hit with Sid on Sid and Friends in the Morning.
We don't know who they are. They're here committing crimes. They're hurting our police officers.
And this is the same crew yesterday taking part in this rally. They say there needs to be changes to bail reform. But the number one thing yesterday at this rally was illegal immigration here to the city. WABC News Time 5:38. Let's go out to Long Island. So yesterday on Long Island, there is a guy who works as a dispatcher for the fire department. He's the one who takes the calls in when there's a fire and then deploys the trucks out to wherever that fire is taking place. So he's taking calls yesterday and someone calls him and says, hey, your house is on fire. It's his house that's on fire in Center Reach. And his neighbors say it was bad. I mean, the flames just shooting out of the home. Then his wife calls to tell him the same thing. Hey, our house is on fire.
It was too big. There was no way a fire extinguisher was going to do anything for it. I mean, those flames were probably 10 feet above the roof. I mean, it was blazing.
We don't know the name of the dispatcher, but he was quick to tell his family to do the same thing he tells everybody to do when there's a fire. Get the heck out of the house, which they did, thankfully. So nobody was hurt. The flames just whipped through this Center Reach house. Not much left of it. I mean, a lot of work will be done to repair it.
Are we in any danger? A house or a car, material things can always be replaced. Lives can never ever come back.
No, he's right about that. But how crazy. You're working the job and someone calls in to say your house is on fire. You can't make that stuff up. Exchange students from New York City, they are studying in Israel. And they just arrived there a short time ago. These are high school students that are at the Alexander Muss High School in central Israel. And you can imagine how worried their parents were back here in New York over the weekend when those missiles and those killer drones were set in Israel's direction. Here's the principal of that school who says, the kids were okay. They, for a short time, were in a shelter just as a safety precaution.
At about 2 o'clock, they decided to move all the kids to the shelters just to be cautious. There were no sirens in Hoda Sharon.
That was about 2 a.m. that they decided to put these kids in the shelter. The kids stayed in that shelter for about 45 minutes. Then they all were told that it was okay to go back to their beds. The students had arrived for this program, which has been going on since 1972. And what's interesting is the principal of the school obviously saw that these students were scared, but she said none of them have any desire to leave the program to go back home.
They don't want to go anywhere. Even the cohort of kids that were in Israel on October 7th said the same thing.
Now, back here in Nassau, Suffolk police, they were increasing patrols at synagogues and mosques over the weekend in wake of Iran's missile attack on Israel. Don't want to take any chances. Here's Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman.
Anytime there's an event like that, obviously we go on high alert. We have a full complement of police patrols that are out. In addition to that, we have Operation Overwatch, where we'll have 20 additional police cars out on the street. And they will do enhanced patrols.
Yeah, so you saw the heightened patrol over the weekend in Nassau and Suffolk County, here in the city, by the way, as well. One of the mosques that got coverage yesterday was the Islamic Center of Melville. That's where that crazy guy showed up and started screaming at people inside the mosque. So they were happy to see that police patrol was increased.
Of course, everybody is vigilant and aware, and we're taking increasing precautions.
When you talk to people who are identifiably either Muslim or Jewish, they talk about the fact that each time one of these big attacks takes place, they worried that someone will take it out on them. Here's somebody who is identifiably Jewish. Now, when I say that, in his case, he has a kippah on, a yarmulke. He's wearing dark black clothing that's sometimes identified with religious Jews who live in places like Brooklyn. And he says he does get frightened that somebody might take it out on him.
What people want to know, if we feel safe? Absolutely not. Visibly Jewish on the trains, I don't know when the next punch or who the next punch will come from or from what direction. So it's definitely not very safe.
There are other members of the Jewish community in Brooklyn who say their faith is what's getting them through times like this.
A very dangerous situation, and I think the only solution is to do random acts of kindness. It's doing random acts of kindness will bring a very beneficial spirit to our neighborhood, more important to our state, most important to our country.
543. You know that 16-year-old who carried out that awful crime, shoved that senior down the stairs of her church in Jamaica, Queens? She fractured her skull in his shove to her onto the hard cement. Well, they called him last week. You'll remember that story. It was exactly a week ago that attack took place. The woman he allegedly shoved hard onto the cement sidewalk is recovering from that fractured skull. So that's the good news here.
I've seen her. I saw her the other day. She's doing much better. She's in a peaceful state. She was smiling the whole time. And I'm very happy to see, you know, that she's progressing.
That's one of the priests at St. Demetrios Greek Orthodox Church where the attack took place. The teen, we now find out that he had carried out 9 other crimes, 9 other robberies, a couple of them violent. So again, one of those questions, how's he back out on the street? And then over the weekend on Friday, when they put him into a jail cell after they caught him and then put him in a station house jail cell, he actually took his T-shirt out and tried to hang himself. But cops were able to get to him before he was able to kill himself. 544. out to Nassau County. Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman honoring a Nassau County police officer, Lieutenant Richard Mossbach, springing into action while off duty and saved the life of a teenager from a burning building in Sayville.
It's something that we learn every day, that we how to respond and how we need to react to these situations. And I'm just fortunate that that kicked in.
Yeah, he was in the right place at the right time. Good for him, Lieutenant Richard Mossbach. 5:45, let's head over to the 77 WABC Sports Desk where we find Justin Allen.
Thank you, Noam Layden. Start here on the hardwood at the Garden. Jalen Brunson notched his 11th 40-point game of the season to carry the Knicks into the number two seed in the Eastern Conference with a 120-119 overtime victory over the Chicago Bulls in New York's regular season finale. The Knicks finished 50-32, their best season since going 54-28 and also earning a number two seed in 2012 to 2013. They moved past Milwaukee after the Bucks lost earlier yesterday in Orlando and will await the winner of the play-in game between Philadelphia and Miami on Wednesday. Brunson finished with 40 points, 8 rebounds, and 7 assists and tied Patrick Ewing for the second most 40-point games in one season by a Knicks player. He finished the season averaging 28.7 points per game, tying Carmelo Anthony for the third-best mark in franchise history. As for the Nets, they wrapped out their season with a 107-86 loss in Philly to the Sixers. They'll have some stuff to figure out this offseason. They end with a record of 32-50, of course, missing the playoffs. On the diamond in Cleveland, the Yankees blew a 2-run lead and then lost 8-7 in 10 innings to the Indians. They dropped 12-4 overall with the loss. Still one of the best starts in their history. Defense was spotty yesterday, and that's really why they blew that lead. New York had been 6-0 in one-run games until yesterday's loss. Aaron Judge hit a 3-run homer. Jose Trevino homered, and Anthony Volpe delivered a clutch-tying RBI double in the ninth for New York. They'll see if they can rebound in the opener of a three-game set with the Blue Jays in Toronto. First pitch there is scheduled for 7:05 p.m. tonight. As for the Mets, they outlasted the Kansas City Royals for a 2-1 victory in their weekend series finale. Harrison Bader broke a scoreless tie with an infield single in the eighth inning, and Edwin Diaz earned his first save at Citi Field since October of 2022 en route to the win. Mets rookie Jose Budo and Royals starter Cole Reagans matched zeros for six innings in a crisp pitcher's duel. New York stranded nine runners over the first seven innings, seven between the fifth and the seventh, before Chris Stratton walked the bases loaded in the eighth, and the Mets finally took advantage. Dwight Gooden also had his number 16 retired by the Mets in a pregame ceremony. Gooden went 157-85 with a 3.10 ERA and 1,875 strikeouts from 1984-94 during his Mets tenure. Up next for the Metropolitans, the present-day Metropolitans, I should say, is a three-game homestand against the Pittsburgh Pirates. First pitch for game one set for 7:10. And Adrian Hauser is tabbed to make the start for the Mets. After a quiet day yesterday on the ice, all three local squads back in action tonight with just days remaining in the regular season. The Islanders and Devils go head-to-head in Newark at 7 p.m. with the Isles currently hanging on to third place in the Metropolitan Division, 3 points up on Washington and Philadelphia for the seventh seed in the East. As for the Rangers, they'll welcome in the Ottawa Senators for 7:30 puck drop. Still tops in the NHL with 110 points, albeit that's hanging on by a thread as well now. Finally, from the links in Augusta, Georgia, American world number one Scottie Scheffler living up to his ranking at this year's Masters Tournament, winning his second green jacket in 3 years, I should say, with a score of 11 under par. That's your sports note. I'm Justin Ellick on 77 WABC.
Let's catch you up on some of the big stories of the day. It is tax day, by the way. You got to pay today. The IRS says demand was overwhelming this weekend. People seeking out their help as they finished off their tax forms online. Some centers, you could go in person, like this place in Detroit.
We're sitting out here with kids. It's cold. It's messed up, man.
Yeah, there was a long line of people who needed help.
We're here to clear our name and our identity so we can receive our taxes that we work hard for.
Today means that the panic will set in for many who procrastinated to the last minute. Experts say if you've run out of time, the IRS will throw you sort of a lifeline.
As of the 15th at midnight, you have to do one of two things. You have to file your federal income tax return under the law or request, and it's a little ironic, it's called an automatic extension of time to file.
Max Stieber there with Jackson Hewitt Tax Service. He says the extension gives you to the middle of October to get the forms in and avoid costly penalties. Of course, there's one huge catch. The extension to file is not an extension to pay, and you could have to set up a payment plan or just pay what you think is the right amount.
Even if you have no money, even if you can't do anything, file your extension or your tax return if you're ready to go and simply don't pay.
Okay.
You have to do something on the record to show that you're compliant with the tax law, either your tax return, postmarked by midnight, preferably electronic filed, or an extension with a good faith estimate of your taxes.
I don't know if I'd go with that don't pay, but I guess if you have no money, you have no choice. If you don't pay, they eventually come track you down and you will have to pay and then pay penalties as well. The other big story, of course, no doubt here in the city, jury selection, former President Trump's hush money case set to begin today, this morning, downtown here in the city.
Jury selection is going to be difficult. I have a lot of faith in our team up there that they're going to be able to get the best possible jury. But I think it's really important to note that the fact that this case is being brought at the height of election season makes the process of picking a jury even more difficult.
Trump attorney Will Scharf there says timing, location could make it a challenge to select an impartial jury. Trump accused of falsifying business records to cover up a hush money payment to adult star, film star Stormy Daniels ahead of the 2016 election. Scharf says it's possible Trump could take the stand, though I'd be completely shocked if that happens.
I think that's going to be a decision for President Trump and the trial team, depending on how the trial progresses. I would say that I think if he does take the stand, President Trump will be a compelling witness. He did nothing wrong here. The truth is absolutely on his side.
No surprise, an extensive security plan in place to protect the president as he stands trial in Lower Manhattan. The Secret Service security officers will clear the block in nearby area before Trump arrives for his trial at 100 Center Street. You're going to want to stay away from there for the next couple of weeks. Prosecutors expected to present a pretty lengthy case demonstrating how they say Trump used his power and wealth to conceal damaging information from voters in the race in 2016. Here's DA Alvin Bragg.
The defendant claimed that he was paying Michael Cohen for legal services performed in 2017. This simply was not true.
Trump lawyers tried to delay this case about 10 times in all. Judge Juan Merchan denied all of those requests, or at least the ones that came to him. Mitt Bragg alleges that the former president fraudulently and repeatedly falsified those business records, and they say they will lay out this case. So how long will this trial take from start of the jury selection, which begins today, to a verdict? Trump's trial could run anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks. The jury will be made up of people only who live here in Manhattan. Of course, they have to be English speaking. They have to be U.S. citizens. They have to be over 18. They could have never been convicted of a crime. The pool will be chosen at random. Who's expected to testify? Cohen, that Trump loyalist turned critic, expected to be a key prosecution witness, as he was the one who orchestrated allegedly those payoffs. Also, Stormy Daniels expected to take the stand as well. What will Trump's defense be? Trump has denied any wrongdoing and has slammed the case as an effort to hurt his 2024 presidential campaign. He's acknowledged reimbursing Cohen for the payments and that it was designated to stop Daniels from going public about the alleged encounter. But Trump said in 2018 it had nothing to do with his campaign. Now, if he is convicted at the end of this trial, what will happen to the former president? The criminal counts against Trump are all Class E felonies, which are punishable by a maximum of up to 4 years in prison. And the judge has discretion in sentencing if Trump is convicted. But let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. We are not there yet. But he could give him anywhere up to 4 years in prison. Of course, that's if that case and if he is convicted in this criminal trial. Of course, we'll be watching it, no doubt, closely. So will you. Keep it here, 77 WABC, for the latest on that trial, which begins this morning, Lower Manhattan, 100 Center Street. The other big story over the weekend, of course, was the Iranian attack on Israel. They sent almost 200 killer drones in Israel's direction. Then they fired off hundreds of missiles. Amazingly, only one person was hurt, very minimal damage in Israel. One of the people that happened to be there actually over the weekend was Timothy Cardinal Dolan. He was there, he said, to meet with members of the Catholic Church, and then, of course, found himself, well, here he is anyway.
So you got the extreme of Hamas, who literally want the extermination of Israel. On the other hand, you got extremes that now want to get rid of Palestinians. Both of those extremes we have to avoid, don't
we? That was him when he landed on Friday. He thought the big story was going to be Gaza, but little did he know what was going to be coming from Iran. He said he did spend some time in a shelter over the weekend, but he said for the most part he felt okay, that he didn't feel fearful. Let's bring it back home. The a high school senior from Long Island, throwing a no-hitter, Smithtown High School West senior Connor Catania did not allow a hit over seven innings.
Such a team win because everyone kept making plays when they needed to. All the defensive plays that they made, it was just like amazing. It was just great.
Catania had 13 strikeouts, also a three-run double in that win. And finally, one of the unsung heroes during the 9/11 attacks is now in need of her own savior. 73-year-old Lily Wu needs a kidney. The former school principal has gone through dialysis for years until last May when she received a kidney from someone who passed away. That kidney is now failing her and she needs another one. Now, Wu, if her name sounds familiar, she was the principal of PS 130 in Lower Manhattan. And after the 9/11 attacks, there were parents who were unable to get to the school to pick up their kids, and she stayed with them for three solid days.
To make sure every child was picked up, setting up a triage center. The city wanted that our school as a triage center.
In fact, former President Bush at the time thanked her for being a great American.
I did what I thought was my responsibility, you know, as a head of school, as someone like a surrogate parent for the kids who were left in my charge.
So now she is in dire need of a second kidney. Unfortunately, it's about 90,000 people across the country in need of a kidney. The line is long. Wu pleading with people to consider donating.
With a good kidney, it can extend my life another 20 years.
Yeah, we got to fix that whole kidney thing. You know, there's a thought maybe we should pay people for their kidneys. We can't get into that now. But I'm over the days, maybe I'll do a little more searching on this story, which is an interesting one, about how there's a thought now of giving people $40,000 for their kidney instead of expecting them just to donate it for nothing.